Today's episode is being sponsored by Swiss Hospitality Guild. SHG is a training center created to meet the strong demand for specialized hospitality staff. This training concept was born from the experience and expertise of its founder, Egidio Marcato. Egidio has become a reference in the world of hospitality coaching and has had success stories in skills championships, including Swiss Skills, Euro Skills, and World Skills, as well as the AICR World's Best Receptionist Competition. Contact SHG at www.swisshospitalityguild.com. And welcome to 50 Shades of Hospitality. This is Crystal Cavan, your host. Today we are welcoming Francesca Palazuelas to our program. Welcome, Francesca. It's a pleasure to have you on our podcast today. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and what you are currently doing?
Ms. Cavan, it's a pleasure being with you. You know I have great appreciation for both you and Mr. Marcato. I'm currently working in Mexico as the regional admissions manager for Ecole Ducasse and as a hospitality consultant.
Can you talk to us a little bit about your newly published book, In Cost and Inventory Control for Restaurants?
Absolutely. So this book was born because I noticed that the information that's provided in the industry and in schools is very obsolete. The information didn't really match when it comes to practice. So I wanted to do a book that was easy to read, easy to understand, and with very practical and efficient ideas on how to actually control the costs and the information that you put into your databases.
Mm-hmm. So most of your background is in F&B, is that correct?
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about where you've worked and what you've done before now?
Sure. So as you know, I studied hospitality in Glion in Switzerland. I did both my internship in Brazil, in Sao Paulo, in the Grand Hyatt, and in the Embassy of Mexico in Kenya, in Nairobi. Mm. And then after that, I came back to Mexico and worked for the St. Regis and then for local, national, and very important chains like Grupos Inversol and Giornale. And I've been working in restaurants ever since.
So you're passionate about food.
I absolutely love food, but more than food, I love service. I love taking care of people. I love taking care of guests. And I love the idea that we work in a very noble industry where you get paid to serve.
So you've studied in Switzerland. Have you studied anywhere else other than Switzerland?
No, I've taken courses in different places, but my biggest education has been in Switzerland.
And how would you describe studying in Switzerland? What your experience of going to a hospitality school here in Switzerland?
Incredible thing about the hospitality education in Switzerland is that they teach you fundamental tools to succeed. Mm-hmm. One of them is understanding that you are going to start from the bottom. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a recurring situation with students all over the place, that they think that they're going to graduate and suddenly become a vice president. And it's not true. You need to start from the bottom and work your way up. The other thing is the attention to detail. All these little details are what matters and what make a difference in the hospitality industry. From how you set up a table to how you take care of your guests and how you recognize them. Also, being humble regardless and being grateful to everybody that teaches you from the beginning.
Francesca, where did this interest in food and, F&B come from? You know, did you grow up in an environment where this was important?
Yes and no. So it's a funny story because my aunt is an important caterer here in Mexico. And I worked with her since I was 15. I would go and spend my weekends working in events with her and learning from her. But where I actually decided to turn into a hotelier, to call it something, when I was doing my A-levels, they asked us to do an internship, and I decided to do my internship in a Best Western in Pangborn, which is the village where my school was. And the manager over there was lovely, and he would make me do everything nobody else wanted to do. And because I was learning, I would do it, happily. And he was so nice. You know, I was cleaning the toilets and doing the beds and washing all the dishes in the restaurant. And he was like, wow, you're so good at this. So I decided that this was really easy and this was very fun. So I decided to embark in hospitality industry.
And tell us a little bit more about your internships. You know, at the hotel management schools here in Switzerland, normally you have to do 2 semesters of internships. Where did you do your internships and why did you choose those places?
So I decided to go to countries that I wouldn't necessarily go. Mm-hmm. I did know that when I would grow, it wouldn't be as easy for me to travel to these places. So I basically grabbed a map and I said, which is the most exotic place I can think of? And I went to Sao Paulo in Brazil. I wanted to get out of my comfort zone. I wanted to learn a new language and I wanted to live in Brazil. I did it in the Grand Hyatt Sao Paulo. I was a terrible intern. I was awful. I still apologize to my bosses. I'm saying that I, you know, horrible. I was the worst intern anybody could ever hope for. And then I went to the Mexican embassy in Nairobi. Uh-huh. I had a fantastic time. My boss was amazing. Up to this date, I'm still in contact with him. He was an incredible teacher, an incredible boss. And he would take me to the United Nations Environmental Program to see Wangari Maathai speaking, to see what the conferences looked like. And it was a very good opportunity for me to see this also.
And Francesca, tell us a little bit, why was your first internship such a disaster? Why was it so difficult?
I was terrible. I was irresponsible. I was in a hurry all day long. Uh-huh. Of course, I didn't want to go to work. I wanted to, you know, to see the place. So, no. Terrible. I'm so embarrassed. But then again, I was also 18. And what do you know at 18?
Okay. Well, that gives hope to all of our young people out there who have to do their internships. Make sure you go to work and be professional.
And if you're not, you grow out of that phase. So it doesn't matter. As long as you don't stay with the 18 mindset, you're fine.
Okay, great. So what is it about hospitality that you like? And what made you choose to stay on this career path?
I love serving. I honestly find it amazing that we are part in a very private way of incredible experiences. So, you know, you're serving a table with a family. You're there serving them to allow them to connect. We've been part of God knows how many, what's it called when you give rings? Proposals. We've been part of so many closing businesses. We've been part of so many incredible experiences, you know, that it's beautiful. It's a beautiful industry where you only get to serve. And as I mentioned before, you get paid for it. It's a very noble industry. Yes, it is very heavy. You have to love it. You're working 14, 16 hours, especially in the beginning. No holidays. You miss out on weddings. You miss out on holidays. You miss out on Christmas. Because when everybody's on holiday is when you have the highest amount of work. But it's nice. It's nice to hear about people. It's nice to hear stories. It's nice to know that people come back and remember you. And you build relationships all over the place. And for me, that is something that I wouldn't change.
Francesca, in your opinion, what are the main problems and challenges that the hospitality and tourism industry in Mexico is facing right now?
So Mexico is a big country and each state handles the tourism sector in a very different manner. Baja California has done a very good job, as well as San Miguel de Allende or Yucatan or even Oaxaca. Cancun and the Mayan Riviera have grown without a long-term sustainable strategy, and Guerrero, where I'm from, has failed to keep up with the competitors. So what I think is that instead of allowing more and more buildings to grow, a smart strategy of giving a new life to the current cities and old buildings needs to be implemented, just like Miami did. There needs to be a long-term plan for growth and tourism attraction. The 80s models of big bunkers and cluster hotels with everything included, I don't necessarily think are good for the environment and would work anymore. And they are neither good for the locals or for the environment, frankly. Mexico faces a shortage of water. Water scarcity is a real problem, as well as waste management. And in regards to energy, we still have a long way to go in what is, in terms of renewable energy.
Yeah, and actually, that sounds like some of the challenges that lots of places are facing today, not just Mexico.
Yes, exactly. And it's unfortunate because we're missing the fact that each country has unique selling points that we are forgetting. And we're making everything so standard rather than encouraging, you know, working with the local heritage, with the natural resources. I think we need to look at Costa Rica and see what they did with
ecotourism.
Exactly. Working with the environment, making sustainable hotels, making it much more eco-friendly and planning accordingly.
It's interesting that you mentioned Costa Rica, because this morning we interviewed Manrique Rodriguez, who is from Costa Rica. And this is one of the things he mentioned too, is how Costa Rica really was one of the very first countries to develop ecotourism. And of course, Mexico has so many incredible, beautiful places where ecotourism could be developed. Do you agree?
Absolutely. And unfortunately, rather than working with it, we're destroying it. And it is such a shame. We have, you know, places like Tulum that were so popular in the beginning because the government was so strict when it came to developing and building and tourism, and it was all the natural areas were protected. And now everybody has been allowed to build without any sort of planning. And that, for me, is heartbreaking. You know, we're destroying all the water reserves, the jungle, and anything.
Yeah, it is. You're right. And again, Mexico is not the only place. Francesca, would you consider your country to be sexist or macho when it comes to choosing men over women for hospitality positions?
Absolutely not.
Good.
I don't.
Okay.
I personally, and it's only an opinion, it's that no businessman cares if you're a woman, a man, gay or straight, black, red, white, or tattooed, as long as you give them proven results. And these can be seen from day one as a new manager or a supervisor. If you in your CV cannot mention 3 factual and actual results given with detailed actions of how you've achieved these, then it's time to start questioning what is missing. But I don't by any means believe that is true. Now, what does pain me, however, is knowing that the biggest priority of any working woman that is a mother are her children and her family. And unfortunately, sometimes in hospitality, women are not allowed to have flexible shifts. So they're expected to be stuck in a job for 10, 11, 12 hours, even when there are no guests, when we're low in occupancy, and we're not given options to leave a little earlier. I think really valuable, goal-oriented women decide to change paths because they don't have an option, and employers are not willing to consider that there are other possibilities that will allow them to give the same results without having to have an employee live 24/7 in the hotel. So in my experience, working mothers are much more efficient because they know that they have a very short amount of time to do the work and sit down and get it done without distraction, and then be able to live and take care of their children and their family. And even when they're taking care of their family, they're still active at work. And another unfortunate thing is that you have to consider that Mexico's very unsafe for women. So valuable women don't want to work until late because they run danger. And employees are not putting special attention into this and adjusting to women into earlier shifts. So women prefer to quit the job and start a job that will perhaps pay them less, but will have them working in safer hours.
Yeah, this seems to be a recurring theme. You know, how is it possible for women who do have children to continue working in the hospitality industry? And as you mentioned before, the fact that many of the people running the hotels may not have children, perhaps don't understand, you know, the needs of women who do have children. So, you know, I think that's an important theme that we need to revisit. What does leadership look like in Mexico in the hospitality industry? And in your opinion, how does it differ from other countries?
I'm going to get in trouble because, you know, I'm not the most diplomatic person of all, but... But I personally believe that we confuse being leaderships with nannies or superheroes. So in Mexico, what I see, and again, this is very subjective, and I'm talking only from my experience, is that we think that leadership is inspiring people to do their job. And frankly, I don't agree with this. I prefer the European way, where the mindset is that you hire a professional adult who has a job description and knows what to do and do his job. We will guide you, yes, in what is expected of you, and I will give you the formats you need to fill in and do the job as our company requires you to do. But I'm not supposed to inspire you to do your work. That's why we hire professional adults. If I wanted children to motivate, I would hire recently graduated or 18-year-olds.
What is the most difficult thing that you've encountered when it comes to recruiting? And what recommendations would you give both to employees and employers when searching for a position or looking to hire someone?
So for employees, it's following with the application. If you really want a job, it's not enough just to send your CV and wait for the employer to call you. I think you have to do the work from day one. You need to make it professional, polite, and make sure that the employer knows that you care. Don't apply for a position that you know nothing about and that requires a certain level of expertise that you don't have. I've had, you know, hostesses apply for directors of a multi-property position, and it makes no sense. So I think it's important that people know that they need to grow realistically. And employees, they need to post positions that have to be sourced locally in places that local people will find. So there's no point on putting a steward on LinkedIn when you're not going to have someone from China move to Mexico for a steward position. I think LinkedIn is for executive and managerial positions, and the other positions should be sourced locally.
Okay.
For me, what's the most important, and the most difficult is that, and I just posted it a couple of hours ago, when you ask someone what they're good at, they're very good at saying what they're good at. But when you ask what you're not good at or what's your area of opportunity, no one accepts where we're failing or where we need to become better. And the moment us as applicants accept that is going to be the moment where we're going to be hired immediately, because people want to hear about you being honest, you being realistic, you being vulnerable, and accepting that you don't have any flaws is a lie.
Yeah, it's like people say, what is your greatest weakness? I'm a perfectionist.
Exactly. That's exactly what happens. Well, no, my greatest weakness is that I'm, you know, I get in trouble all the time because I'm not diplomatic. That is perfectly fine. And in that regard, people will understand who they're dealing with and how to work with someone with certain flaws, you know?
Absolutely. They get the real deal.
Exactly. And it's much better. You know, that's the nice thing about hospitality. We are supposed to be open and warm and friendly and accept people as they are. You know, we're meant to be tolerant. So with these flaws comes great tolerance, I think.
Francesca, what in your opinion are the trends that we're going to see over the next few years in hospitality, in food and beverage, in event management?
So from what I'm seeing is that people are choosing smaller and smaller boutique hotels. Especially after the pandemic, people are choosing places where there are not many people. So you want to be in places where, you know, you don't have 1,000 other tourists making noise and around you. I think Airbnbs are doing really well because of that, frankly. People want to experience the places in a more realistic way. And condo hotels too. I think condo hotels is a big trend right now. I think it's a very smart way of investing. If you want to buy a property and then you're not using that property, then you put it in operations, and the operator of that condominium, of that tower, of that building, then operates your apartment as a condo hotel. So it's basically the same as Airbnb, but with a private owner and in a more personalized manner. Diets are changing. I think people are more and more aware of the importance of we're going into a plant-based diet. So I see a lot of hotels working with a more plant-based menu, and I love that. I'm not a vegan myself, but I love seeing that people are working more with a more vegetarian offer, selection of dishes.
Francesca, you've talked about having learning difficulties with numbers. Do you think that schools do enough or do the right thing to accompany these students? We often feel, you know, some students, when they have a learning difficulty, they feel that they're labeled stupid, but, you know, which is not at all the case. So can you tell us a little bit about what your opinions are on this topic?
This is a very difficult and complex topic, and I'm going to tell you why I think so.
Okay.
To begin with, I think we make math very difficult to students, and we don't provide them with factual situations of how you use maths on a daily basis. And if you're someone like me that questions everything, you need to understand where the numbers come from. You know, I'm only talking about numbers because that was my difficulty. Once you understand where the numbers come from, it makes it much, much easier. If you don't remember numbers, as I mentioned before, Excel is a fantastic tool that we don't teach students properly. Cost control is made very complex and very difficult when it shouldn't be. It's super easy and it's fun and well implemented. It takes, you know, 30 30 minutes to go through an inventory and to cost your entire menu, but we're not taught how to do it in a very efficient manner. Another thing is that with learning difficulties, one of the first things you have to consider is that I don't know how much human development work students do at an early age. And you create this idea, or you start putting as a student yourself, these tags that you're not good at something, or that you're not smart enough, or that, you know, you don't like certain things. But we don't provide the students with enough information for them, you know, to question if whether that's true or not. So for me, it was always, I don't like numbers, I'm bad at numbers. And I would always fail accounting, math, anything regarding to numbers. I would open my exam, laugh, and close it back. And it wasn't until I started doing human development that I realized that, one, I need to take responsibility of wanting to learn, you know, of trying harder, and two, have the confidence in myself to actually question without being scared, because that's another fact. And we don't want to question because we're scared of what we're going to be taught. And for me, it starts with that. More and more, we see students that label themselves with having X and Y number of learning difficulties, but how much are we actually providing students the tools to, again, to take responsibility of their learning, to want to learn, and to get rid of all of these tags that we put?
And to encourage and to give them confidence. I think that's a big piece, is to say, you know, there's nothing wrong with having a learning difficulty. You can still succeed in life, even if you have a learning difficulty, and to make sure that teachers understand these challenges and that students feel supported and that they're given the tools, as you mentioned before, to succeed.
Absolutely. So you see, for me, it was very important, because when I graduated from Switzerland, I came back and I had the opportunity to be the assistant of that director, at least in that time, one of the most important restaurant chains in Mexico, the most awarded, the biggest, the most important, the most popular, the one that was selling the most. And my boss, who's my mentor, my tutor, and I am ever so grateful for him, was super financial. And I didn't even know how to count to 10. And the first thing he said to me was like, Francesca, I'm going to teach you how to learn how to count. And I would come back crying with my husband, when he was then my boyfriend, because I was like, I don't know how to use Excel. I don't know how to count. I don't even know how to read what he's giving me. And I don't want him to kick me out of my job. I love this job and I want to prove to him that I can. So my husband would stay up at night with me, teaching me how to use Excel and analyze the numbers. So I would go back with him the next day and show him that I did the job. And my husband was really good at it, because he would not do my work. I would do it, but he would teach me how to. And I started learning that numbers are really fun and that you should back everything up with data. But if nobody teaches you how to analyze the data, where the data comes from and what it means, it's very difficult to actually want to learn. And numbers are extremely fun. It's extremely fun to see how your sales fluctuate from one year to another, how to use the previous sales to forecast, you know, what's going to happen in the future. And I mean, nothing is certain, but it gives you a really good basis to do your job in a more organized and professional manner. And it's not difficult. It's just that we all give ourselves the label of, I hate numbers, I suck, I hate you, Excel, and
I'm allergic.
These are wonderful tools.
Thank you so much, Francesca, for joining us today and sharing your background, your experiences, and your insights into the hospitality industry and into your passion for food and for beverage.
It's my pleasure, Crystal. Thank you very much for having me here. It's always nice to see you and Mr. Marcato. You know that I have great appreciation for both of you. Geopolitics was my favorite subject when I was at Lyon. And it's so nice to see you, even if it's virtually. Thank you for giving me the opportunity. And I hope that as hoteliers, we can start making a responsible change when it comes to being more environmentally responsible, because there's a long way to go.
Today's episode is being sponsored by Swiss Hospitality Guild. SHG is a training center created to meet the strong demand for specialized hospitality staff. This training concept was born from the experience and expertise of its founder, Egidio Marcato. Egidio has become a reference in the world of hospitality coaching and has had success stories in skills championships, including Swiss Skills, Euro Skills, and World Skills, as well as the AICR World's Best Receptionist Competition. contact SHG at www.swisshospitalityguild.com.